You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Word? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Yeah. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your
booties for Black Girl Nerds. Welcome to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Angelica, and joining me is my co-host, Stacy. And today we are here to discuss episode 5 in season 6 of The Handmaid's Tale entitled Janine. Blessed day, Stacy. How's it going?
May the Lord open. I am ready to go. I am excited about this episode. It was so, so good.
It was quite the caper. I enjoyed it. It definitely moved the plot right along. Mm-hmm. Definitely on the edge of our seats. Had me like clutching my pearls at some point. So I was like, no. Not now, not this moment. We'll get into that scene later. But it was
definitely reignited my who's gonna die final season of a show list. Someone's gotta go, and who's it gonna be? But before we got too into it, I had to make a correction.
Okay.
On our last one, Commander Bell does in fact have two arms.
Oh, okay. I thought I was crazy, Stace. I'm like, yeah, right.
I was like, why did I think that? And so I went back. His suits, for whatever reason, have this detailing on the arm.
Okay.
And so it's like this raised thing. And so the way he was standing, it looked like his sleeve was kind of folded up and then like sewed in. So I was like, oh, you know, he's a commander, so they make him fancy. But I was like, what did he lose that arm for? And but in the episode, when he's walking into the club, he has one hand around Janine, mm-hmm. the arm that I thought was gone. And I was like, wait, that's a hand on her shirt. I was like, oh no. So let me make that correction.
Okay. I mean, people lose limbs in Gilead the time. So it's not too far of a stretch. So I got you there. But yeah, this episode, like I said, is named after Janine. She's like a key component of like what made this work. I really enjoyed it. I just wanted to share some tweets. Someone said, Suspian X said, I hate seeing Janine treatment. Hate those commanders so much. # Hammies.
Agreed. Again, it's internet culture, but in the real life of the show, you know, it's that idea of like, I have all this power, I'm untouchable, so I'll do and say what I want to.
Right.
But it's so strange because it's all for the effect of men.
Yeah.
You know, it's men doing these things to women to impress other men. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll get into it, but when he's told he's like not liked, then he's like, okay, you know, he kind of backs up and starts the plot a little bit more. And it's like, is it worth it? You know, and maybe in this society for him as a man, maybe it is, but ugh, it's rough.
Yeah, it was definitely a pissing contest. We'll definitely get into that later on the episodes. And I have a few tweets earmarked for each section. So we're going to start with Nick.
Nick.
He stressed me out this episode.
And it's so funny, this very first scene, they're like, you know, they do the whole thing. And I said, he's going to go to the hospital. He's going to go to the hospital.
Yeah. So we learned some things. So Commander Wharton is greeting Nick, you know, in their shared home in the morning. And Nick is preparing for the day. You know, he's overseeing about 26 Gilead reunions in New Bethlehem. And he emphasizes, you know, security is going to be my top priority. We're going to get this, you know, smooth and Morton's like, okay, well, so what happened with No Man's Land? Because that happened on your watch, right? What are you doing about that? And Nick is like, you know, I launched an investigation, and Morton is just kind of not buying it. Whether he suspects Nick directly or he just knows something is afoot, he's not buying it. And, you know, he tells him, you know, well, Nick is like, well, you know, I'm investigating, but not much is going to be done because, you know, there's no witnesses. And then Morton's like, well, wait a minute. One of the guardians did survive and he's expected, you know, to make somewhat of a recovery. And you can see in Nick's face, he's like, oh, shit. Like, and then Morton says, well, we're all thinking, and hopefully he can identify these perpetrators. Like, we got to like kill all these rebellious rebels, or I'm using the same phrasing, but anyways, he's our rebels, we got to put him down.
I think Nick needs henchmen because he keeps putting himself in places where he does not need to be seen. And it's like, this is kind of how you got into the trouble in the first place, was going to take care of this issue that really someone else should have been taking care of. Now, of course, that requires a lot of trust and maybe a lot more power than he has, but he is great at faking it till you make it. So I could see him needing to be the person that carries out everything is so destructive. And because we talked about this, we're like, he could have just said, you know, he was handling an issue and things got out of hand, and or he found out that those guys were helping the rebels, so he had to put them down. You know, there's so many other avenues to go to, but he just keeps picking the one that gets him in the hottest of water. And he's like, yeah, I guess I got to get rid of these people so I can climb on them to get out.
Yeah. So he, you know, so he ends up kind of making a choice, right? So he goes to visit the injured guardian, and we learn he's named Toby. He's played by Kyle Jonathan, and he's being looked after by his mother, who is honored to have Nick, you know, arrive there and just like shower her with his presence. She says like Toby was very proud of his role as a guardian. You know, he admired the men in his unit. He admired men like Nick. And then she's like, promise me you'll find out who's responsible for this. And Nick is like, yeah, I got you. You want to, you know, get some rest? I could watch him for you.
Hey, why don't you take a break?
Yeah, I'll take a break. And he's like, she's like, okay, I do need to look after my son, my youngest. So she leaves. And then as she walks out, Toby cries out that he's cold. So Nick covers him with a blanket. And then Nick decides to kind of figure out like just how lucid or how present Toby is. So he's like, hey, Toby, do you recognize me? And Toby's just like, it looks like he realizes who he is. And then he's just like, so where's my dog? Right. So he's obviously not in his right mind. And Nick seems to be relieved. So he's like, okay, dude does not have his senses. I'm leaving. And then he's like, nah, this is a bad choice. And he walks back into the room, closes the door, locks it. And we don't see what happens, but we know what's about to go down.
Do we see him grab a pillow? I thought we saw him grab like something that indicated he was going to like, so this scene actually was really fantastic in the silence. And honestly, that's kind of where Max Minghella, where he excels and really thrives, is the kind of facial, the physical embodiment of the stress that was in this room. There's a point where he's like bending over to kind of look at Toby, and you can, he says, do you know who I am? Mm-hmm. And you can hear the heart monitor be like, beep, 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 you know, and then he's like, where's my dog? And then Nick is like, okay. Yeah. And as he gets back up, then the heart monitor goes down. And so it made me wonder if Toby was like, lying. Do you need me to be brain dead? Like, I don't know who you are. Where my dog at? You know? Yeah. And I was like, that's someone that you could mold into, you know, a lackey, you know, for better lack of a phrase. But Nick was also like, I don't know that he has that in him to be the type of tyrant that is needed to persuade someone that you shot in the, you know, to work for you later. And so him taking those few steps out where you're like, okay, he's going to go. He's like, everything's fine. And he's like, nah, I know how this goes. Yep. Like, I got to fix this out. It was so like dreadful. You know, there's just this kind of sense of dread and loss in it. And I thought it was so interesting and well done.
Yeah, he's tying up loose ends. And this season, we kind of see Nick take a turn into the more violent, more ruthless realm. And obviously, he's a part of Gilead, so he's always been complicit. But we've almost always excused him, right? Because he's just trying to survive. He's just trying to keep June safe. But now it's like, I'm looking out for self. Even though he got himself into the situation because of June, this is him taking a life to look out for himself. And
But
so.
also, well, also, he is looking out for himself, but he's looking out for himself so that he can still be of service to June. Do you know what I mean? It's
But
like,
it's a fine line. It's a slippery slope. Like how almost every person in Gilead could probably give you a good, justifiable reason why they do what they do. Oh, well, we beat down women and oppress them for the sake of the children, right? We
Oh, well,
want
yeah.
to, right? So, like, everyone has. So, in my mind, like, Nick to me is becoming more of a darker version of himself. Despite his good intentions, he's starting to do things that he probably wouldn't have done a couple years ago. That's
Oh, well,
basically
yeah.
all I'm saying.
That's what I was saying is like he's finally, because I think he says that he understands that June can't love him the way that he loves her, or that, you know, she has someone else in her life, then them having a future isn't really feasible. But I think there has always been this little thing in the back of his mind says maybe, maybe, maybe. And I think that maybe in ha is what kind of inspired him to be like, you know, okay, I'm going to take her behind the lines. You know, I told her not to come. She's going to come. I'm going to let her come. You know, kind of making these decisions that push him into these corners where he has to keep digging himself out. It's in a hole that he keeps trying to dig himself out of. And I think that that is going to change him, because once he does get out of that hole, he's going to realize what's the end goal. You know, I still can't be with her. So it'll be interesting to see how that, if he doesn't get himself killed first. So.
Yeah, his hands are getting a little bit dirtier these days. So next we turn our attention to Aunt Lydia, who is, pleading for these former handmaids. And she reiterates that she was told that the girls will be rewarded for their services. And Serena scoffs at her, like, "You actually believe that?" And then Lydia's like, "Hold up a second. Prior to your recent travels, you believed a lot of things as well. So let's not go there." And then Lydia tells Serena, like, "You harm handmaids in your home. Like, you should be sympathetic to them." And then Serena's like, "Wait a second. You harm handmaids as well, right? Both in their own ways." So then the gears are shifted, and she re proposes that the retired handmaids can work as caregivers in the fertility center that she plans on building in New Bethlehem. As handmaids are basically the brand of fertility, right? Like this is these are our spot not our sponsors. These are our the face of
Our
fertility, right?
mascots,
Yeah,
almost,
our
right?
mascots. And so Lydia calls it a divine calling. And then they're interrupted when Serena receives flowers from Commander Wharton. And Lydia's like, "Oh, who's that from? Read the note." And it's like, "Oh, he wants to see me before he escorts Rose back to DC." And then Aunt Lydia's encouraging her to consider Wharton as a viable option. And her argument is, "Hey, a healthy womb is not something you should waste." So Serena's like, "I don't know."
Aunt Lydia is so messy in this scene. And it's so funny watching her pragmatic nature kind of get upended by her. I really do feel like it's a true love for Janine, or at least a compassion, but it was something that was very, you know, hard scrabbled. And it's also very, she is the one person who Aunt Lydia loves without condition. And I think that that kind of clouds some of Aunt Lydia's judgment, because she's like, oh, the handmaids, they told me this. And it's like, girl, you know, you absolutely know. But then to be able to give it right back to Serena and be like, well, girl, you thought this too. But it's like that makes it even worse, because you know she knew. So why didn't you know? You know. But I love when the flowers came, I was like, oh, they're from Wharton. And I was like, is she gonna be so bold to be like, you know, look at them, tell me who are they from, like just
Yeah.
being all up in the business when she, you know, basically knew who they were from. But I especially love Serena's face. And we'll get into what the next part, but you could tell immediately she was like, this is getting too deep. You know, I'm not trying to get married again. I'm not trying to be a wife again. I don't know about this. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, so the next, well, not the next scene, but later on in her arc in this episode, she meets with Wharton in a library and she discovers that he's built it for the boys and the girls in Gilead to read, which, you know, he says is inspired by Serena. And then he reveals his plans on naming the library after himself and
When I
Serena.
tell
So
you, I cackled when I the Serena Joy and Commander Wharton Library, I and made sure to put her name first
first,
and not
yes.
his. And I was just like, Commander said, I know what I want and I'm going for it. I left. So I was like, okay, presumptuous. But yeah.
Right. Got a little bit of game. So she's moved by this gesture and she turns as Wharton proposes to her. You know, he just comes out and tells her, you know, she's everything that he's ever wanted. He's never been so sure of anything in his life. You know, no offense to Fred, no offense to the dead, but he tried to erase the best parts of you. I want all of you, you know, all the romantic things girls love to hear. And then Serena says, you know, I'm not ready for this. Like, I did not come back here to be remarried. I'm here to help change this country. I belong in New Bethlehem. And then Wharton's like, we can do it together. And she's like, well, I'm not moving to DC. And he's like, okay, well, I can move to Boston. I'll move my household for you. And she's like, well, I can't go to Boston either. I need to be here in New
Right.
Bethlehem. He's like, okay, we're going to split our time. We're going to be not bi-coastal, but we're going to be here and there and everywhere. I just want to do this with you. And so she's like, you know, are you sure? Are you willing to raise a son that doesn't, you know, that isn't coming from you, like referencing Noah, you know, another man's son? And he's like, I would be honored. Like, I love you. You know, he doesn't say I love you, but pretty much just very theatrical with it. He gets down on one knee, it's a nice big ring, and he proposes officially, and Serena agrees to it. So, you know, our
So
girl
here,
kind
oh
of
yeah.
gets a happy ending. And I just wanted to
Well.
pull up a tweet because I'm so sick of Serena winning. And
Yes.
as are other people, like she always finds a way. So Hi Giselle says, hate to admit it, but one thing about Serena, she's gonna get herself a man.
I love that. Serena lucks into a lot of winning. And I think that that is purposeful because I think her fall is going to be great and swift coming. This scene really made me like uncomfortable for them, like within the premise of the show. I still don't fully have a handle on who Com Commander Wharton is. He seems to be very devout. He seems to believe in what Gilead was doing. However, he also seems to have a respect for women, but again, within the confines of this very kind of misogynistic view. And, you know, he was like, oh, you know, I did the cooking at home and I taught Rose how to cook. And, but I'm like, you know, who cleaned that up? Who, you know, there's just this thing of, women are able to be equal to each other. Women are able to have a certain station. That's why when they mention this library, they're like, boys and girls can read. And I said, are you going to have a girl section and a boys section? And like, never the twain shall meet. You know, there's so many particulars. And for Serena to be so hinged on her freedom as a widow, that grants her a lot of autonomy, which she puts into jeopardy the second she gets married, because the second she gets married, that commander is in control. They can make any contracts that they want beforehand, but you know, they're all verbal, nothing matters. It just depends on how he's going to react. And so I truly wonder, is he going to switch? If so, why? You know, I'm He doesn't seem as interested in reputation, but leaving DC and then moving your family, you know, up to even if it is to Boston and then going back and forth to New Bethlehem, that's a big deal. And to be like, you're doing it for a woman, how is that going to come off? How is that going to affect? what's happening with Serena and them. So,
Yeah,
oof.
I don't really think he particularly cares. And also, he also has the thought of like, my daughter's here, she's given birth to her first child. Like, he has ways. Although, to your point about who he is, I kind of look at Commander Wharton as I would compare him to a benevolent slave master, right? Even though he's a
Right.
slave,
Yes.
and people, oh, well, my master was so good to me. He never beat us. Okay, but he was still a slave master.
Yeah.
So, you know, as progresses as he comes across, as he still is an oppressor, whether he's nice or not. And his methods may be different from other commanders, but the goal is the same. So, yes, he might be open to letting Serena read. He might be open to, like, you know, building a center for boys and girls to read. But at the end of the day, it's a patriarchal, misogynistic society, and honestly, he's no different than everyone else. And that theme is actually throughout this episode as we get into the next session, section, especially when it pertains to Lawrence. So we head to our girls, June and Moira. They're preparing for their dry run back at Mayday headquarters. Luke and Ellen are posing as service workers. They're going to smuggle them in a delivery truck. And as planned, they're disguised as Marthas, their faces covered. So they arrive at Jezebel's, and Ellen instructs them that they'll be back in 2 hours. And then she wishes them luck, you know, Godspeed. And then they make their way into the facility with the rest of the Marthas. And just remember, the reason why it's so easy for them at this point is because they rotate Marthas out every week. Their faces are covered. So it's as much as they beef up security at Jezebel's and claim, they really don't think too much into it. Like, rotating out women every week, I guess.
I
But
do wonder, and it might just be like a hubris thing of, she would never come here. But I'm like, how is June not plastered all over Gilead? Like Gilead's most wanted. I don't understand how any, but I also am wondering how spread that is. Because remember when they went to DC, they really didn't have a concept of June. They knew that there was someone who was causing trouble, but they didn't really necessarily know it was June. Because I was like, girl, how are you going to do this? But then I was like, well,
Well,
maybe they don't know about you.
I'll also add, they probably, it's intentional, I think, what with them not broadcasting June, because it makes her a martyr, not even a martyr, it makes her a hero. It gives a name to the rebellion. So by saying we feared this woman, June Osborne, it kind of empowers her. So I feel like they would rather just get her on the low, which they tried, and hope that she's not dumb enough in their minds to come back. But June is gonna June, you know, she.
June got a June.
June got a June. So, you know, like I said, they kind of blend in with the rest of the Marthas. They get inside the facility, and they, you know, pick up a cleaning cart, and then they enter the dressing room looking for Janine. And they happen to see Angela slash Charlotte's drawing on Janine's vanity. And another Jezebel tells June that Janine is, like, so proud of her daughter. She thinks she's going to be the next Rembrandt. And so they're like, okay, great. Where's Janine at, right? And the Jezebel says, you know, she's upstairs in the penthouse. She's pre-gaming for the commander's arrival. And, like, wait a second, they're not even supposed to be here. And then the Jezebel tells him that Commander Bell is obsessed with Janine. So the plan kind of changes. Moira's like, I don't know about this. And June's like, no, we have to keep going. And then an aunt interrupts them and is like, what are y'all doing? Like, they're talking on the job. And June, you know, quick thinking, says that they plan on going up to the penthouse to prep for the commanders. And the aunt tells them to make it sparkle. So they head up to the penthouse, and a guardian is posted outside of the door of the suite. He lets them in but tells them to be quick. They pretend to clean, and then they are looking, and they finally spot Janine. She's singing to kind of, like, encourage and kind of boost the morale of the other Jezebels. And I thought the song choice was interesting. It was What's Up by Four Non-Blondes. I'll
You
pause there.
just,
Go ahead.
oh yeah, that is, I mean, just Lilith Fair Central. It's like that is 100% a feminist anthem. And I absolutely love that she sang that, especially in that environment. And it's such a Janine thing to do, And I, well, this version of Janine, who I absolutely love. So yeah, I was really that. got me in the feels.
Get you in the fields, starting a revolution. Yeah, it's nice to see Janine with some sense because older Janine, I mean,
Yes, right.
not older as in past Janine, like early episodes when she
More
was kind of
mature
like,
yet.
yeah, out of her mind a bit and just delusional. She used to get on my nerves, but now, she's my girl. So Janine locks eyes with June and Moira. She walks over to them and she's like, "Are y'all Martha's now, right?" Because like she's not expecting her friends to be there, and they tell her that they're there with Mayday. They have plans to get them out next week, and so Janine kind of tries to talk to them a bit, confirms there is one guardian inside the penthouse suite and one guardian at the door, and then the commanders come in. So right, they gotta separate, and they even.
I was going to say, I love this part because Janine was ready. She was like, look, the door is here. Let me see that map. Here you go in here, and this door opens, and here's the code
Well,
and
yeah, well, that's
everything.
later in the episode.
Oh, was it later?
Don't
Sorry.
want to
Okay,
get
I
too
thought it was
far.
right here.
But yeah, but she's ready for them, and she kind of gives them a bit of information. But she does tell them like, "Hey, meet me in room 613." Like,
Okay, yes. Okay.
And so of course, Commander Bell walks in, and he's just like, "Where's my girl out? Where's my kitty cat?" And she's like, "Here I
Wow.
am." And right, like this is corny. And so, June and Moira as Martha's, they start to kind of like try to keep a low radar, and then Commander Bell is like, "Get there, Martha's, get your ugly butts out of here." So they start to shuffle out, but when he pops champagne, it spills everywhere. And so he directs June to, clean up the mess, clean his shoes, clean his pants, go higher, go higher. And Lawrence walks in and he's like, "You're such a tool." And so he steps in and he tells June to leave, and he doesn't know it's June, but he touches her, he picks her up, and it's like, just go on, get out of here, these guys are no good. And there's a sense of familiarity with this Martha, right? He can't put his finger on it, but I feel like I know her from somewhere. And then
There's a thing that happened earlier when the head Martha downstairs was sending him up to the pimp suite. She's the penthouse. I almost said
She's
pimp
called it the
suite.
pimp suite.
I know, right? I was like, well,
It
honestly.
is.
And he she says, make it sparkle. And so June and Maura start to walk off, and they show the woman behind them, and she's watching them the whole time as they walk off. She's out of focus, but she's watching them. And June kind of starts to look back around over her shoulder, like, don't look back, like, just keep going, you know? And so when Lawrence picks her up, she goes by him, and he's looking at her like, huh. And then she turns around again, and she does it more throughout the episode. I'm like, girl, if y'all stop turning around.
Right, stop
But
looking.
there is that kind of, this isn't your average Martha. One other thing is when Belle was like, oh, my little kitty cat, and she went, row. I loved that Janine has her kind of own little mini rebellions because he kept wanting her to meow in the last one, and she just wouldn't do it and didn't want to do it and just all this stuff. And so that was kind of like her way of getting around it and being a little rebellious. And again, I just love this type of Janine where she's like, I am sick of it. I'm
Yeah,
done.
she's not with it. So Commander Bell, tries to take control, and he, tells, tries to grab Janine again, and they're all like, lounging, drinking, and they're praising Commander Lawrence on his success and, the good press. But there is an edge to it, because it's very clear that the other commanders aren't quite with his liberal ways and his desire to expand. And so Janine, to your point about her small rebellions, turns her attention from Commander Bell over to Lawrence and kind of flirts with him right in front of Bell and is like, "Oh, can I get you a drink? Is there anything else you want?" And so, that pisses off Bell, and he's like, "Go sit in the corner, like eyes to the wall, and wait for me." And
Yeah.
which,
Well, he
like,
said that strap. He was like, she was about to go upside her head. So I'm so glad that that didn't happen.
yeah, and so the other commanders are just like, apparently it's a game that they play with her, and Lawrence isn't having it. He's like, "You know what? I'm gonna take her." And he's like, "What? That's my girl." And the other commander's like, "Let him have her. He has a crush, like he's earned it. Let him go." And actually, earlier in the scene, a commander had mentioned that a Martha is more Lawrence's speed. Like Janine might be too much for him, but nonetheless, he takes her. And as he's walking away, like Lawrence calls him a pig. He's like, "You're a pig. You're not
No one
smart.
likes you.
Nobody likes you and nobody respects you." And he's like, "Watch yourself," right? So someone like Commander Bell does not like to be punked, especially not in front of other people. And that doesn't go very well. So Janine ends up taking him to a private room. She thanks him. And he's like, "Yeah, don't worry about it. Those other guys are disgusting." And she's like, "Wait a second. You're not a good guy either. You're just not as bad as the rest of them." And he's just
She
like,
said, "You're, I wrote it down because I loved this line. You're not a good guy, just compared to them, you are." And I was just like, that wraps up Lawrence so much. I love that.
And earlier to our conversation, when I mentioned how Commander Wharton, he might be looked at as a good guy in comparison to the rest of the commanders. So Lawrence takes it as a compliment. He's like, "Oh, well, thank you." And she says she has to go, but before she goes, she reveals a peephole into like the main suite, and she tells Lawrence like, "We can't let them win." And so Lawrence takes this opportunity to observe the rest of the commanders who are actually plotting against him.
Gossiping,
Yeah, they don't
just
like
talking
it.
trash.
Well, they actually making schemes here. They, Bell's leading the charge, and they kind of all agreed that they're going to end up reinstating the strictness of Gilead proper in New Bethlehem. They're going to bring back as many refugees as possible. That's the whole point of them waiting. We want to bring everybody back. We're going to shut down the borders, and then we're going to make Lawrence the fall guy, right? He's going to be the reason why the second coup was successful. And then
Isn't it?
Bell's like, "I want him on the wall." And they're like, "Well, you think your dad's gonna allow it?" He's like, "Yeah, I can convince him." And so like all the commanders are with it, and Lawrence is just like, "Oh, snap." But go ahead.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh, dang, I'm in some hot water." I again, this is one of those things where I'm like, it's too close to real life. It's a little too close to real life. The idea of, yeah, we had all this kind of, progressiveness, but now we need to plan together to draw back, bring back all these restrictions and bans and close our borders and just like everything. And makes you ask the question, which probably should be asked now and isn't, which is, how does this work? Like, the entire point of y'all making New Bethlehem is because the world was about to attack you. Like, you were about to fall, and really from the inside. So like, New Bethlehem is doing nothing but good for you. So it's like, do you want to actually prosper, or do you want to give the facade that you are quote unquote strong or tough, or whatever you think that you're coming off as being a Gileadian? So yeah, I thought that that was extremely telling. I love that Janine showed him that. And I especially, again, Janine, my girl, she was like, "Okay, just wait here. I'll be back." Like, no asking. Like, I brought you in here so that I could leave. So, and you know, and didn't really tell him what it was for and didn't feel the need to. And he was like, "Well, okie dokie," right?
She gave him something to chew on at least. So we're in room 613, and I thought the scene was a well, the beginning of the scene was kind of funny, where June's like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe Lawrence was up there. He's never been into Jezebel." It's like, I didn't think he was that type of guy. And Moira was like, "Seriously, June? Like, you're so naive for this. Like, he's a commander after all." And then Janine enters and they embrace. And Janine learns from them that Mayday plans on killing all the commanders, and they need Janine's help to prepare the girls. Janine reassures them that the girls can be trusted, and she also gives them letters that the girls wrote to their families on the outside. And then she's asking, June and Moira, like, do everything you can to get them out, and actually, we've been secretly preparing for this moment all along. Like, this, we've been waiting for an opportunity like this. Then, to your earlier point, she gives them the lay of the land, including the knowledge of, the secret elevator from the garage that brings the commanders up to the penthouse. She gives them the key code and instructions on how to exit the building. She gives them the schedule of the guardians, all the stuff they need. And so before she leaves, she says, like, wait a few more minutes. I'm gonna leave now. The guardians switch out every hour or so. before she can actually walk away, June's like, wait a second, come with us, right? She wants to save her. And Moira's like, no, you have to stay. You know, this is going to ruin the plan. You have to help prepare the other girls. And June's like, someone else can do it. And Janine's like, you know what? You know, she kind of thinks about it, like, I really can go with you guys. And she's like, no, I'm going to stay. I'm going to help the girls. They're my girls. And it's only one more week. Like, it'll be fine.
This is the point where I remembered, I was telling someone, I said, The Handmaid's Tale is very special in that there's enough time between seasons that I forget that I can't stand June. And there is always
that was
some
a tweet.
Point.
Is it really? That was a tweet. Like, every season, June reminds me why I can't stand her.
Right. And this was the moment. Because this is so June, where she's like, I have to get you out, you know, mm-hmm. even though we have this plan, it wasn't my plan. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, we don't necessarily need to follow it. You know, I'm not really as invested in that plan. So, you know, just come now, and we'll figure out the rest later. And it's like, you know, that's not a good idea. Yeah. And, you know, she's like, oh, well, you know, I can't leave her here. But it's like, Janine has grown. And you've seen that she's grown and she can handle herself and take care of herself. Yeah. And so when she was like, we promise, as is Jen said, I was like, oh, here we go. And then Janine was like, it's just 1 week, right? Just one more week. And I was like, they're going to kill Janine. They're going to kill Janine. It's going to be June's fault. But yeah, I thought that and then once we go on with the rest of the scene, this conversation was much needed.
much needed. So when Janine leaves, Moira blows up on June, and she's like, what were you thinking? Thanks for making me the bad guy here, right? Like, I'm the one that tells Janine she can't go now. She has to stay behind. Like, thanks a lot. And on top of that, what if we were to take Janine? The entire plan would be ruined because the whole place would be flooded with security. And June's like, well, I wasn't thinking about that. I just wanted to save Janine. You know, she's my friend. We went through hell together. Da 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 da. And Moira was like, you know what? I'm so sick of you. I'm so, so sick of you. It's always about you, your pain, your trauma. Can I have PTSD? Can I have guilt? Can I have trauma considering where we are, the very place that I've been violated and beaten over and over and over? And compared to what I had to endure, being a handmaid was a walk in the park. And June's like, you know what? You're right. You had it way better. You know, I had it way better. You know, nothing's worse than being a Jezebel. You know, I only got, you know, essayed once a month. You had it daily. So it kind of lightens the mood, right? And so
that's what I was going to say. This is a really good example of their relationship. Mm-hmm. And how, and I love them. Moira says, I always love you, but I just don't like you sometimes. Or, you know, like right now, whatever she says. And for anyone else to say something like that to Moira, it would get shut down immediately. But because it's June and because Moira loves June and vice versa, they're able to kind of reset. I mean, honestly, I still think that Moira probably had it worse, but I get it. I get where both of them are kind of coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think that June does need to be aware because Moira tells her, she was like, I just had to save Janine. And then she says, well, I feel guilty because I had to leave her back in Chicago. And it's like, that's still about you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still not dealing with, because in a week we can save Janine and everyone else.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I loved when I talked with Samira on the carpet, she said this season we were going to get like the Moira of season one. Mm-hmm. Of the one that people really came to know and the one who was kind of angry and really defiant and standing up for herself. And I think that we're getting that in spades to really good effect.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely. And, you know, with that little sarcastic comment, the mood is lightened and they kind of laugh at their attempt to compare struggles. Then they kind of come together on that and they say, no, they both suffered. Neither one of them should have endured any of the suffering that they had. And if they keep on comparing, they're just letting Gilead win, right? It's divisive. Mm-hmm. And then June does do the right thing and says, you know, I'll never understand what you endured, but I empathize, right? And, you know, you know, she also says, "Well, I didn't know you hated me so much." And that's, you know, that line that you mentioned. And she's like, "Yeah, but I love you all the time, even if I w don't want to." And June apologizes for being a bad friend. So it's like, oh, you know, a come Jesus moment. They're about to hug it out, and the guardian walks in, and I was like, no.
Oof, MacGoof. This scene was traumatizing. Holy moly. Okay, go
Yeah, because
ahead.
they were just talking about being violated on a regular basis, and I'm like, no.
My God.
So he walks in, he's like, "What are y'all doing in here?" And we're like, "Oh, we're just cleaning." And he sees the paper, right? He sees the letters, he sees the map, and he's like, "Oh, paraphernalia, right? Like, they're not supposed to read or write." He's like, "You guys are in big trouble." And so you just already know the ominous tone, like you already know what's about to happen next. He takes the letters, the map, he locks it in a safe, and then he coerces Moira to get onto the bed, which you're just like, no, Moira was just talking about everything
Especially
she's
more,
endured.
yeah.
Like, no, and on top of that, Moira's gay. So that's the last, you know, like there's so many levels to it. Like, no,
Of
this is not
nastiness,
the
yeah.
nastiness for her. So, you know, she gets pushed on the bed, and then June tries to intervene and he threatens to shoot her. So as he's like lifting Moira's skirts, and I'm like, no, I can't watch this. Like, I thought to myself, I cannot endure
Yeah, I
watching
fast
Moira.
forward. I was like, okay, we're just gonna press plus 10, plus 10, plus
Yeah, like
10.
I can't watch this scene go down. I forced myself, but I was like, no, I don't want to see this happen. And you know, so June starts to like pick up a phone and like the cord, and then she looks at Moira, and Moira picks up on her nonverbal cues and like nods her head. And so she like gets up really quickly and like elbows the dude in the face, and then they end up tag teaming, old boy. Like, the, you know, one gets some high, one gets some low. At one point, I think it was Moira that jumped on his back and tied the phone cord around his neck and gets him on the ground. And then June's like kicking him as he's being like strangled to death. And eventually he does die.
Thank
And
goodness.
they're like, oh, we gotta go. And so they try to get the paperwork out of the safe. Ooh, they don't have the code, but they have to go because this place is about to get locked down. Because as Janine mentioned, they check in every hour. So I'll stop there if you have any thoughts. No,
Ugh,
no thoughts, no
that was
notes.
my thought. I was just like, oof, MacGoof. Is this where she's like, we have to get rid, or is that a little bit later
It's a
when
little
they
bit later, but she
actually
definitely said we gotta go.
go?
Like,
Okay.
we gotta
Yeah.
get up out of here.
That when he put those things in the safe that killed, I was like, oh, how are we gonna do this? I was like, please, Winnie, I'll have a photographic memory, like something. But I love the teamwork between them, and you know, born out of necessity, of course, but having that kind of secret language between them is kind of what saves them in the end. And so yeah, that scene was rough. It was very rough.
It was very so they decided to have to get rid of the body. So they take the body of the guardian down to the incinerator to dispose of him. Meanwhile, Luke and Ellen pull up, you know, for their rendezvous. Unfortunately, the guardian being missing causes a lockdown. So the guardian that greets Luke and Ellen is like, "Y'all gotta get up out of here." And Luke is like, "Yeah, I recognize that you guys have something going on." And he like smacks the crap out of Luke. I'm like, "Luke, be quiet." And so this is all happening at the same time. So June and Moira are making their way out, and then they see that the guardian has stopped Luke and Ellen. So they have no choice but to go in another direction. They go out into the garage and they see Lawrence getting into the car. Moira really doesn't know his history. So she's like, no, stay back. And June's like, trust me. And she jumps out in front of Lawrence. And he's just like, oh, hell no.
You're right.
He said, uh-uh. He gets out the car. He's like, June, move out the way. I don't know why you're here. I don't know what's going on, but you got to go. And June's like, please, just please help us. Help us get out of here. And he's like, us? Like, what are you up to? And they're, you know, June is not going to take no for an answer. She's like, just get us out of here. So he's like, all right, puts him in the trunk. And June's like, can you get us over that? And he like slams the trunk on them. And that's how the episode ends, as these sirens blast for the lockdown at Jezebel's.
There are two, it's so interesting to me because I feel like Lawrence, when he does his good deeds, it's his way of kind of memorializing his wife, but then also hoping to neutralize the negative things that he has to do.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of why he lets, you know, Janine get away with whatever and just, you know, the women in his life, period.
Yeah.
But when they were upstairs and June was like, oh my God, why would Lawrence be here? I didn't think he was that type of guy. And then, you know, Moore looked at her like, what do you mean? Like, they're all
Right.
that type of guy. What are you saying?
Yeah.
But knowing the history between June and Lawrence, I was like, June, why would you think that he was there like of his own volition, you
Right.
know, just going on? And so then we get to that scene. And so you have this one scene where she's like, oh, I don't know him as well as I think I did. And then another scene where she's like, all right, I have to know him. Now I have to rely because this
Yeah.
is the only way we're getting out. But then also doing that June thing of adding a little bit more, like, you think you can get us over that? And Lawrence is like, if you don't shut up, sit down.
Just behind down sitting in that trunk.
Oh,
Yeah.
love it.
Yeah. They weren't, you know, they didn't have the code to the garage. They didn't have a key card. So all they had was Lawrence. I mean, that plot
Hope
armor
and a
really
prayer.
is keeping them alive. But if anyone was gonna save them, it had to be Lawrence. So that's how we end the episode. Any final thoughts on your end?
I loved it. I thought it was a great progression. I thought that it really set up a lot of possibilities for what's going to happen in the next few episodes. And like I said, there was a lot of action. There was a lot of like suspense and that kind of thing, which is always great. And of course, we got to see the ongoing mending of the relationships. We saw her have her kind of moment with Luke last episode, and now she has her moment with Moira. And I'm really hoping that that kind of coalesced into a partnership between the three of them. So
Yeah,
we'll see.
definitely. I agree. And I'm gonna briefly shift gears because I just need to get this shout out out. We'll be back next week to discuss episode 6. But in the meantime, if y'all like monsters outside of the monsters in Gilead, go see Sinners. Gotta get
Ooh,
that
all
plug in.
right.
Yes,
I've been
yes.
hearing it's amazing,
So good.
so.
So good. So good. And two Michael B. Jordans. Yum.
Yeah.
Anyway. Unrelated to Handmaid's Tale, but we're Black Girl Nerds. Had to throw that in.
Hey, I know that's right.
So thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back next week, and we'll talk to you soon. Blessed day.
May the Lord open.
Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.